Scientific and technological advances and open markets are creating both opportunities and challenges for today's organizations. To stay relevant as a company, you need to be able to adapt to unprecedented change, uncertainty, and ambiguity. In this podcast, we explore how leaders can build such organizations. I frequently meet people that seem to use roadmaps to remove uncertainty. Or perhaps it's the other way around, that the adoption of roadmaps makes people believe that uncertainty has been removed. Relying on traditional roadmaps in complex situations creates a fallacy. And for clarity, traditional roadmaps are always used to illustrate the work that has been foreseen and planned, and when it's supposed to be done. And sometimes they illustrate the sequencing of work and how much progress that has been made. They are so common and habitual that everyone is familiar with them and know what they look like. But, just to be on the safe side, visually, work usually is listed vertically, top to bottom, and the time horizon, typically a couple of quarters or a full year, is drawn horizontally. And horizontal bars or boxes represent when work will be finished. One big issue with these roadmaps are that they don't take the element of surprise into account. Some will argue that's irrelevant since teams already considered uncertainty during their planning. But from my experience, I can tell you that that's rarely the case. Just think about how much planned work you've seen that finish on time. That should clearly indicate that the element of surprise is not reflective in traditional roadmaps. Removing uncertainty requires insights and learnings. To learn whether something is effective in complex situations requires experimentation. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, experimentation often leads to unintended consequences. And traditional roadmaps with a granular temporal axis are therefore very inappropriate for managing complexity. On the contrary, when used, they trivialize complexity. One differentiator between being good at managing complexity and being bad at it is strategy. Similar to the roadmap fallacy, for a lack of a more appropriate phrase, people's common perception of strategy is unfortunately simplistic and misleading. Most people often tend to mistake strategy for either a plan, a collection of goals, a written paragraph with fancy buzzwords, or even wishful thinking. This is partly because not many people are tasked with strategy, nor have they studied it. So many people don't have enough understanding or experience of what's involved. Most have only been presented with some of its outputs. For example, a plan, a set of goals, policies, or decisions, rather than being exposed to the practice of strategy and the contextual data, conditions, assumptions, beliefs, insights, and bets that are being used when strategizing. This is similar to a company seeing and copying the output of what's referred to as the Spotify model, the squads, chapter leads, guilds, etc., over understanding what conditions, assumptions, and insights that informed how Spotify chose to organize at a particular point in time. One important intent with strategy is to create situational awareness. Unlike traditional roadmaps, strategy takes uncertainty into consideration, which directly influence what outputs are created. For situations that indicate uncertainty, experimentation will be needed and surprises should be expected. Therefore, one concrete reasonable output for these situations could be a principle for teams to prioritize availability to respond to unforeseen events over insisting on only working on planned work. And for situations that are clear-cut, experimentation isn't needed, nor should surprises be expected, and a concrete reasonable output in these cases might be a traditional roadmap. Before sharing a concrete example, I want to mention that I particularly appreciate Richard Rummel's book, Bad Strategy, Good Strategy, and Simon Wardley's work on mapping. Their experience, thoughts, work, and language on what strategy is are centered on sense-making and coherence, which I've talked about in my previous episode. Each of their decomposition provides topology that is very useful for reasoning and sense-making. I find that their work complement each other. Besides their similarities, I've also noticed some distinct differences. for example, the things that has influenced them. Rummel's book is based on his many decades-long work and research on business strategy and the many people and companies he's interacted with over his career. And Simon's curiosity, work, and research on strategy goes back to the early 2000s. He's particularly influenced by Sun Tzu's Art of War and the OODA Loop by John Boyd, which he applies onto a business context. Rummel's book introduces three concepts that he refers to as the kernel of a strategy, sources of power, and loosely, strategic thinking. They essentially introduce sense-making and coherence as a foundation to strategy, then a number of general and specific ways companies make use of knowledge to achieve success, and lastly, several methods you can use to surface and manage your biases, assumptions, and knowledge. Simon's work is generally referred to as Wardley mapping and resembles a framework. It includes several elements that can be used to create situational awareness, shared understanding, surface assumptions, and informed decisions. One key component and differentiator is to enable sense-making and coherence through visualization. To visualize how, for example, activities, practices, and knowledge are affected by the dynamics and forces of capitalism, primarily competition. Recently, I found it relevant to practice Wardley mapping, mainly because it has the visual components and clearly includes the dynamics of capitalism, while also experimenting with using Rummel's sources of power to help people overcome some of the uncomfortableness and difficulties we generally seem to have when starting to practice sense-making. Specifically, I mentioned in the previous episode that a client asked me to help them evolve their capability to innovate, and that one of the narratives we identified and prioritized through sense-making suggested that their current strategy might have become outdated and needed an update. So, a director and I spent time to map a key need one cohort of their users have. The cohort consists of people that want to make a living on creating content. We use the client's knowledge, publicly available knowledge, and our assumptions to map out the capabilities that was needed to fulfill this need. We then visualized which of the capabilities the client's team were currently developing, and were able to reason through the help of sources of power that they weren't investing enough in content matching capabilities. We shared the map and our thinking with others in the organization to create opportunities to challenge our reasoning, and people generally agreed it was sensible, so it became part of the agenda. Besides this, we also came to the conclusion that we, between the director and I, were lacking some important insight and knowledge around some other capabilities, and that there were opportunities to further explore with alternative perspectives and prompts. It's definitely worth mentioning that when we did this, we needed to remind ourselves that an accurate or perfect map or source of power doesn't exist and cannot be created. This ultimately helped us to facilitate discussion and reasoning to increase situational awareness. Once we acted, we learned and repeatedly could go back to the map and update our reasoning. In summary, being good at strategy means that you're good at managing uncertainty, where the users will use or pay for your product, and how your business could benefit from different solutions. Being good at strategy also means that you're good at assessing when activities and practices are useful and when they aren't, in what situations they're appropriate and when they are inappropriate. One size doesn't fit all. Good strategy also informs you what areas of your business is complex or ordered. Lastly, to tie my ending with where I started this episode, in some situations it might be appropriate to use a traditional roadmap, in some the now, next, later style might be more suitable, and in some a roadmap might be inappropriate altogether. What should be clear is that relying on traditional roadmaps in complex situations is a fallacy. Thanks for listening. Until next time.